Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
At Vanguard, you're more than just an investor. You're an owner. That means your priorities are Vanguard's too. So whether you're planning for retirement or trying to save up for your next big adventure, Vanguard will work alongside you to set personalized investment goals. That's the value of ownership. All investing is subject to risk. Vanguard is owned by its funds, which are owned by Vanguard's fund shareholder clients. Vanguard Marketing Corporation Distributor.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
This episode of the Gegenpressing podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. The tournament is here. BetOnline is your bracket headquarters for this season with the best bracket contests out there and odds, lines, and info on every game and every round right up until the national championship. You can access the most up-to-the-minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices and even track your bracket real-time all the way through the tournament. Head to the BetOnline today and get in on the action. Remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, that is B-L-E-A-V, BELIEVE, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. Hello and welcome to Gegenpressing, the Bundesliga podcast. I'm Manu Fied, he's Stefan Bienkowski. Stefan, I'm almost not used to kicking off the week with you, but here we are, we're kicking off the week with you, even though you're supposed to be on holiday. So, first of all, how was your Monday off?
My Monday off was great. We did have one of our subscribers ask in the weekend chat, where's Stefan? Did he get lost walking his dog? Because I wasn't taking part in the match day chat with during the France game. And I'm actually happy to report that I more or less did, actually. Went for like a big 3-hour hike on Saturday. And then yesterday on Sunday, I actually climbed Arthur's Seat in Edinburgh. And anyone who's been to Edinburgh will know that it's not a big hill by any means, but it's a lovely thing to do. Mm-hmm. Just kind of last minute thing because we're visiting some friends in the capital. So yes, the dog and I have both had our feet up today.
I've done Arthur's Seat twice.
Yeah, it's not a big hill, but it's a lovely view from there.
Oh, that's incredible. I love it. And all the hiking paths are really nice too. It's amazing having that ride in the city.
It's the geography of Edinburgh is just incredible. You know, because you've obviously got the beach as well there. We went to Portobello Beach, and I went up to order some food. They've got like a nice kind of beachfront, and there's like a kind of pizza place where you can order food and sit on the beach. And me being a typical male, ordered the biggest pizza because I was hungry, and it came as a 20-inch pizza, which is just humongous. And the wife and I had half of it and took the other half home for dinner.
Nice. Yeah, Edinburgh is one of my favorite cities, period. Love it. It's just a gorgeous place. So a little jealous that you got to go. Obviously, it's right in front of your house door, so quite easy for you to reach. I do think, though, that you also managed to keep an eye on the France-Germany game, which I think was pretty much over after 6 seconds.
Yeah, 7 or 8. I can't remember what the time on the clock was for the goal, but I did watch the game. And yeah, just to clear things up, because people might wonder, we're going to talk about the France game today. We're going to do a bonus show on the Netherlands game, which will come out on Wednesday. And then after that, we'll see how we got on with our German content and whether we kind of pivot back to Bundesliga. But yes, for people who maybe picking us up on their podcast feeds on a Tuesday, Wednesday, this is the France episode. We'll do a separate one for the Netherlands, so you can listen to them both one after the other. You can save them both for after the international week and listen to them back to back. You can do whatever you want, just make sure you listen.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think there's a lot to take away from the DFB in general. I just wanted to maybe really briefly touch on the whole Nike thing too. We may or may not do something more in depth about it. It all is still in the stars because like we have to kind of pivot back to the Bundesliga. This, although it doesn't feel like a Klassiker, there is going to be a Klassiker on Saturday. But Stefan, my thoughts on Nike, because I've been asked a lot about this, is that Nike made an offer that is twice as high as Adidas, and the DFB had to do due diligence. It was close bidding, right? And when you have close bidding and you're a membership association, like the DFB is, at the end of the day, you have to take the biggest bid, and they did. There's nothing really else to see there. Obviously, because this is being Germany, and Adidas is Germany's favorite child right after the German national team, this is a big story. But I feel like at the end of the day, if you, and you know, the numbers that I've heard and the numbers that have been reported, you know, the Adidas deal was about 50 million euros. Nike's offering 100 million plus. So this is a deal worth almost $1 billion. Is it by more than $1 billion. This is, you know, from a kit supplier deal, the largest by a biggest margin for anything, any team in the world. They had to take it. You know, at the end of the day, if you're a membership association, that a non-profit membership association, I shall add, you don't really have a choice. And the outrage by many politicians, I thought, was quite amusing over the weekend.
It was quite an interesting contrast to what was going on in the UK, where Nike themselves had actually got into a bit of crazy drama, because I'm sure you saw this with the England top, and they'd coloured in the St. George's Cross.
Oh, dear.
Which, do you know what's fascinating? Like, I'm not really on Twitter anymore, and I think I managed to completely avoid this entire fake outrage until maybe Friday night, I think it was just leading up to the Brazil game, and honestly, people just have nothing else to talk. You'd think there was nothing else going on in the world, the way that people got upset about this stuff. But yeah, that, and then of course the Adidas deal, which as a non-German, I found actually quite funny, because absolutely the DFB should be taking what Nike offer, because they've come in, they've eaten Adidas's lunch and said, that's what happens when you get complacent. And as you said, it's a huge deal, but not just in terms of money, but also culturally, because, you know, the German national team, more than really just anything, I'd imagine, except even maybe Bayern. I mean, have Bayern ever not had an Adidas top?
I think they may have had Irima, but Irima was 100% daughter of the Adidas. And the same is true for a German national team. They have one Irima, and they have actually for a brief period won Umbro in 1966 during that World Cup that England won. They wore Umbro, and that experiment was quickly ended.
But it's a really fascinating discussion, which, as you said, we'll maybe try and do a separate show on, because it really shows Nike stepping into Adidas's back garden here. And it's not just about making kits, is about really trying to break into, you know, Adidas's kind of home market, which is really interesting from a German football point of view. But yeah, it's very fascinating. The only thing I've maybe got to add is I was joking with you and Matt on our WhatsApp group that maybe this was actually a secret. Hans-Jakob Watzke was a secret agent for Puma, because obviously Puma have a stake in Dortmund. Watzke is the Dortmund CEO, but he's also the current DFB president. Is he the president, technically?
Yeah.
I was joking that obviously Puma had him as like an undercover agent, and got him to cancel the Adidas deal in favor of Nike. And anyone who doesn't know, actually, Nike and Puma and Adidas go all the way back to two brothers, whose father used to own what's the term for it?
Not Nike though, only Puma and Adidas.
No, sorry, yeah, Adidas and Puma, the both founders of each company were brothers whose father ran a store that made leather boots, left it to both of them, and they fell out with one another. I think it was actually because of the Nazi regime. I think one agreed to make boots for the army and one didn't, I think. Maybe I'm making that up.
There's a book on that, really good book, by the way, in English as well. Oh, what's it called? I have it on my shelf somewhere because I had to read it for my PhD. because of course Adidas was also really involved in the Soviet Union. They made cheap boots there.
Oh, really?
During the time of the Soviet Union to finance the government there. Yeah, it's crazy. but it's, yeah, the outrage. I think the funny thing is, I mean, first of all, correct, I think Hans-Joachim Watzke is the CEO, not president. Neuendorf is the president, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, this is the first time the DFB has done this in due diligence and the cleanest political way possible. Because they have turned down Nike deals before, right? There was a 500 million euro offer a few years ago that they turned down for a worse deal from Adidas. And the first time this was a closed bidding, Nike won. So, you know, I actually think the outrage in Germany too, because DFB actually did this by the books in the most transparent fashion that you're actually supposed to do, right? And the first time this was done in a transparent fashion, the company that they were really closely aligned with lost. Which tells you everything you need to know about the way deals were done in the past. Wink, wink. So I don't feel sorry for Adidas. You know, I heard a really good, really good statement about tradition on the weekend from another podcast that I listened to. So shout out to 32 Thoughts where I heard this podcast, where I heard this sentence, and it struck home, and I thought it was so fitting for this. Jeff Merrick on that podcast said tradition is just peer pressure from dead people, and I'd be like, that is 100% fitting here. Who cares if it's tradition that 70 years Adidas was the main sponsor for the DFB team? At the end of the day, this is about money.
Yeah, which is maybe a good transition to the German national team, because we're now 10 minutes in and we haven't even talked about this football game yet.
Which, by the way, Hats off to the national team, Julian Nagelsmann. They managed to take the conversation from this political scandal where all the major politicians had to say and to, oh my God, our team can play football again. Because that's what this was. As I said on top of the show, I think it was 7-8 seconds, Florian Wirtz with an incredible goal. Toni Kroos, who... Yeah, I know Wirtz deserves all the accolades. He was made man of the match. I actually think it should have gone to Toni Kroos because he was involved in both those goals, right? That set up play that they actually trained for with their set piece coach, I forgot his name, he's Danish, within a few seconds to catch France off kickoff would not have been possible without Toni Kroos in the lineup, because he gives you the structure to make this all happen. His numbers were astonishing. I also thought watching the game, he looked about 4 or 5 years younger than the last time I've seen him from the national team, which is probably what happens if you retire from the national team. It back ages you. I thought he was tremendous. And he did almost everything to a T that I thought would happen or hope for when that Julian Nagelsmann brought him back. He unleashed Musiala and Wirtz. He gave Havertz the freedom to roam. I actually thought Gundogan didn't have the best of his games, but, you know, he was still impactful. He made all of those things possible. And I actually think Toni Kroos, in my opinion, should have been man of the match in this game.
Yeah, I thought he was also incredible. It's fascinating the way that he's managed to come back into this team, and some things did kind of stand out to me, because I was watching him play and play really well and trying to figure out what it was about him that Germany have obviously needed that only he can offer, and in particular the comparisons to Joshua Kimmich, who's obviously usually standing 10 or 15 yards to his right. And even Ilkay Gundogan, who I agree with, is maybe 10 or 15 yards in front of him. And I thought it was actually quite telling that Kroos looked so incredibly fit. And maybe it was just the new kits, but because every time he went up to take a corner, he just looked in impeccable shape, because obviously the kits maybe just are quite, they're quite skinny, they're quite tight. There's not much to hide, shall we say. He looked in perfect shape. And then I actually thought, I completely agree with you about Gundogan. I actually thought he was one of the few German players that didn't actually have a good game. I thought he looked very tired. His touch was poor. He often got caught in possession. Look, of course, he's up against one of the best teams in the world in France with some outstanding ball-winning midfielders. But I thought the entire system worked despite him. And I think I did kind of think going through the game that that's one of maybe the few kind of tricky things, because if I'm not mistaken, Gundogan was, yeah, he's a captain. So I thought maybe Nagelsmann's kind of backed himself into a kind of corner there with keeping Gundogan as captain, because when I looked at that team, I thought, wow, this is like a new look Germany. Everyone knows what they're doing. But in the middle of it is this kind of aging player who didn't quite know what he was doing. But anyway, we can talk about that in a moment, because I do kind of want to go back to Toni Kroos here. And I thought the really interesting thing was that what I could really tell from, you know, what he brings to the game and what Joshua Kimmich doesn't bring, and this might be a really reductive argument, but he's just got a physical presence that Kimmich just simply doesn't have. He's obviously very tall. He's deceptively tall. I think people often forget that about Kroos because of the way he plays football. He's still quite quick over 5 or 10 yards. He's very good at just kind of stepping in and taking the ball off players. And he never gets caught in possession. And I think a lot of that just comes down to his physicality. He's also got extremely long legs. He's got a huge kind of stride. And he can win headers. And he just doesn't get pushed off the ball. And I just thought it was so striking that he didn't seem to break a sweat throughout the match. He looked incredibly fit. The French midfield really struggled against him, and perhaps most notably, you know, I kind of wrote down some notes during the game, and I thought, is this kind of the weird bookend to Kimmich's kind of the peak of Kimmich's career, in the sense that, you know, for so long Kimmich was kind of heralded as the kind of successor to Toni Kroos, and the fact that Toni Kroos had to come back. And at the age that he's now at, which, you know, we're now talking about a player who's going to be 35 next year, looks and is playing better than Kimmich has in some time now. So maybe somewhat bittersweet in a sense that, you know, Germany have turned to Kroos and he's proven that he's still so much better than anything else they had. But I thought him and Andrić worked really well in the middle of the park. You know, Andrić was almost kind of like his kind of second in command, or he was able to kind of help and support him. But I thought both players did a great job of stepping into defence, which then allowed both Kimmich and Mittelstadt to kind of move up the park. I definitely noticed at times that both kind of Tah and Rudiger were both kind of really urging both fullbacks to get up the park. Same with Andrić and Kroos, and that's simply because they had those two kind of holding midfielders there. And yeah, I thought it was a huge testament to how well Kroos has done at this stage of his career. He didn't break a sweat in that game.
Yeah, 121 out of 128 passes completed, 143 touches, won all of his tackles. I mean, and he provided the Wirtz goal, right? That's outstanding. You touched on two players that I wanted to talk about. Let's start with Robert Andrić. I want to talk about Joshua Kimmich as well, because I think he is interesting on his own too. And I think what it allows for Kroos to come back actually will solve a ton of issues for Germany, and Kimmich will be key to that. But let's talk about Robert Andrić first, because I think he was the only one in my projected lineup that I had wrong. I think I had Kroos playing next to Kroos, Pascal Kroos, of course. And although Pascal Kroos, I think, is a really good player, and I think depending on the opponent, he will probably play a pretty big role. When I watched this match, Robert Andrić made a ton of sense. In fact, I don't think Germany had a player like Robert Andrić in the starting 11 since Jens Jeremies. Remember him? From 1816 Bayern Munich midfielder, really nasty. We had players that had the work rate of Robert Andrić. The Bender twins come to mind, right? Khedira as well. But Robert Andrić offers something on top of that, which is that little bit of nastiness. There was a couple times where France tried to get physical with the midfielders and he just steps in and ended it. And I think that is something that kind of holds this all together, right? It kind of, you know, frees Kroos and Gundogan and all the other attacking midfielders in the setup to do the things that they can do best, which is to be creative. Andrich is really, really important there. I mean, he does the same thing for Leverkusen, right? Like where he does, he just does the work, but he's also so important in sort of doing the dirty work and breaking up opponents' attacking play, helping the center backs. I think Rüdiger and Tah, there was one moment where Rüdiger had to step in and, you know, prevent a goal by France when it was really late and they were up 2-0 and it hit the underside of the crossbar and goes out. That was, I think, the only really dangerous moment that France had. But, you know, he did make it so much easier for the two center backs. And I think you look at this now, that Groß-Andrich pairing makes a ton of sense. And Andrich is just, you know, he's going to have a big market after the Euros if this is successful.
At Vanguard, you're more than just an investor. You're an owner. That means your priorities are Vanguard's too. So whether you're planning for retirement or trying to save up for your next big adventure, Vanguard will work alongside you to set personalized investment goals. That's the value of ownership. All investing is subject to risk. Vanguard is owned by its funds, which are owned by Vanguard's fund shareholder clients. Vanguard Marketing Corporation Distributor.
Selling smoothies is what I do, but for small business insurance, I chose my State Farm agent. He's a small business owner too, so he knew how to help me personalize my policies. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
This episode of the Gegenpressing Podcast is brought to you by BetOnline. The tournament is here. BetOnline is your bracket headquarters for this season with the best bracket contests out there and odds, lines, and info on every game and every round right up until the national championship. You can access the most up-to-the-minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices and even track your bracket real-time all the way through the tournament. Head to BetOnline today and get in on the action. Remember to use the promo code BELIEVE, that is B-L-E-A-V, BELIEVE, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was really important to the kind of system that Nagelsmann wanted to play. And I think that was the kind of key thing as well. The system, more than anything else, worked. And he picked players that fitted into that system. Whereas in the past, obviously, you know, particularly under Hansi Flick, it was a case of picking, you know, his 11 best players or his 11 favourite players or 11 most popular players and then trying to work backwards from there. And Andrik's a perfect example of that. When Germany were passing out from the back, Andrik or Kroos would slot in between the two central defenders. If it was Kroos, it meant Andrik was there to kind of cover for the space that was left, because Gundogan was obviously playing really quite high up at times, almost more or less a number 10, really. So Andrik had to kind of cover that space. And yeah, you're absolutely right. He just kind of puts the hard work in. I mean, there was one opportunity where I think Dembele's maybe in the second half kind of swung the ball in the back post. And I think a French player did get on it, but Andrik's kind of had a foot to it. His foot was wildly high in the air, but it's that kind of physicality that he's willing to do that can make such a big difference between whether a player has a free header or a free shot on goal or is under pressure. He's just hugely important. And, you know, as I said, he just kind of did a great job. I thought that whole kind of back four or back six defensive structure worked really, really well, because I was actually quite taken aback by how much control Germany exerted over France in this game. You know, I don't know if it was on purpose on France's end that they just were quite happy to forego possession at all, really. because I was just kind of looking at stats there. I mean, I know possession stats aren't really that important, but Germany finished it with 56% possession. Let me see if I can quickly check the pass maps. Yeah, they made almost 200 more passes than France, for example. Yeah,
509 to 707.
Yeah, and it was all based on that kind of back six being able to control the game, and I just thought it worked really well. I thought man for man, I actually thought both German fullbacks struggled with the men they were meant to mark. You know, Mbappe went by Kimmich plenty of times. I thought Dembele went by Mittelstadt plenty of times. But the important thing was, and something that we haven't actually seen in German defences for some time now, is that every time they did go by those guys, there was someone there to cover. And I think that's why Tah and Rudiger were so pivotal there. Mm. The amount of times that Mbappe managed to get past Kimmich but then ran into Rudiger, or Jonathan Tah was there to cover for Mittelstadt, or in fact Andrić or Kroos was there to kind of cover, was just so important, because that France team just basically were really relying on both Mbappe to Dembele and Dembele to basically create something out of nothing. And I thought Germany dealt with them really well. So I think that's the key thing. It's and you know, you've said it plenty of times, it goes back to the kind of cliche, but what's true about German national teams in the past is that they may not have the best individual players, but they have the best system, they have the best team, they have the best formation. And that's kind of what we saw against France, in the sense that, yes, Mbappe might go past Kimmich, but he has to then get past an Andrić or a Rudiger or whoever else. And from a defensive point of view, or a possession point of view, I thought it was really interesting. And it's actually kind of what we suggested, isn't it, in the preview show. We said, you look at the way that team, the players that Nagelsmann has picked, and he has picked a possession style team. And we talked about why that means that the likes of Mats Hummels weren't picked, because, you know, if you even just think about Mats Hummels in that lineup instead of maybe a Jonathan Tah, there's no way that Germany can sit on the halfway line passing from back and forth with guys like Dembele and Mbappe in that side, because Mats Hummels has to take 10 or 15 yards back just to make sure there's no space for Mbappe to expose behind him. So I thought Nagelsmann really showed how good he is at putting together a system, putting together formations, and picking the players that he wanted from that. And he's made some very brave moves in that regard, in terms of Andrić coming in, Toni Kroos coming back, and, you know, and dropping big names like Mats Hummels, Schlotterbeck, you know, and guys like that. Obviously, Mittelstadt himself is probably a big call itself, but I thought everyone slotted into their role really well, and the system itself worked really well. That ultimately is why Germany looked much better than France in this game, I thought.
Yeah, I think too that, you know, speaking of Kimmich, I think he's quite interesting in this. I do think that he did the job against Mbappe. Yeah, Mbappe got past him, but as you said, he only got past him when there was another guy there. You know, Kimmich isn't the fastest player. Like, how are you supposed to keep up with that?
And Mbappe is undoubtedly the you know, the hardest player he's going to come up against. So we can't say by no means am I saying, oh well, Kimmich doesn't work at right back because of how he did against Mbappe, because that's obviously the hardest job he's going to have, isn't it?
It doesn't get any harder. I think personally, Mbappe is the best individual player on the planet. You know, talent wise, of course, you can make your argument for a couple other guys as well, but as a whole package, he is so fast, he's so dangerous, right? Like, you put Mbappe in any team and that team becomes dangerous just based on that. Look at PSG over the years, right? I think that Kimmich, given the task, actually did quite well. And to be quite honest with you, I think it almost liberated Kimmich as well, because now no one talks about him anymore, right? No one talks about him having to lead this team to glory and all that. That's on Kroos now. This team was handed to Toni Kroos. And Toni Kroos said, yeah, okay, I can do that. Thank you. Like, in fact, I would actually argue the reason why Toni Kroos stepped back in the first place is because there wasn't that clear definition that this is his team, right? A lot of the politics around Toni Kroos were that, oh, he just passes the ball sideways, he doesn't take leadership, blah, 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 blah. He comes back, all the centers, he's the messiah to return Germany to the status of a world power. And he says, yeah, okay, I can do that. Like, now that we have a real clear definition of what's going on here, I'm happy to do that. And I think players like Joshua Kimmich who I don't think were ever quite ready to step into that role, might benefit from that. Because now all of a sudden, Kimmich is just a player in the system. And, you know, in the two tournaments where he was supposed to become a bit of a leader, he almost seemed to be overwhelmed with it. And, you know, there's the famous post-game after the Costa Rica where he said, well, oh, he's worried that he's going to fall into a hole because his generation is forever going to be tainted with failure, right? Because it's the worst stretch of German football national team history. I think for him to just be quote-unquote a right back and do a job and play a position where he has shown in the past that he can be world-class in might liberate him to a level that will actually benefit this team as well. And he, you know, he doesn't interpret the right back role like most right backs. He's actually really similar to Philipp Lahm, who's almost a playmaker from that position, right?
Right.
I think that does him and the German national team the world of good, because it also reestablished the hierarchy in a way that the players who are under pressure because they feel tainted by failure are no longer going to have to worry about that. Does that make sense? Right?
Yeah. No, I think it's a very important point, and you're absolutely right. It allows Kimmich to kind of slot in and do what he wants to do rather than have to worry about being the main man. And it also explains Toni Kroos perfectly, because he plays like a guy with nothing left to prove. You know, he plays like a guy who's just going through the motions in a good way, you know, cracking out the greatest hits. And like I said, just not breaking a sweat throughout. And you're right, and that confidence just oozed through that team, and it's exactly what was necessary. You then look at, like, imagine this team with Kimmich and Goretzka in there, where you've got one who's maybe burdened by, as you said, expectation, and then Goretzka, who's, you know, seemingly constantly carrying one injury or another, looking like some sort of old battled, you know, war horse that has to be taken out to pasture or something, and it's completely different. It's completely different. And I think this is what Nagelsmann does so well. He's just very acutely aware of these little things on the pitch. And he actually talked about his press conference today when he was asked about it. He said the key was the fact that these guys around the pitch all have their little partnerships that allows them to work off one another so well. You know, the example he gave was Kimmich and Musiala, obviously know how to play alongside one another very well, but, you know, Jonathan Tah and Antonio Rudiger obviously know how to play alongside each other very well. And he's like, you know, Florian Wirtz and Mittelstadt will build it up in time. You could tell that obviously Andrić and Toni Kroos knew exactly where each the other one was. And maybe if we do just kind of move on to the attack now, which I wanted to mention as well, because I thought, as much as I thought Gundogan was kind of quite quiet throughout the game, and I do appreciate that sometimes he can be one of those players that isn't very obvious. He's doing the kind of hard yards, he's kind of maybe getting stuck in when no one's looking and disrupting space in the opposing half. I thought Musiala, Havertz and Florian Wirtz just played off each other so wonderfully well. You know, they played like the three of them have been playing football together since we're, you know, 10 years old. And I was just so impressed with the not just the way they could find each other on the pitch, but the fact that the three of them were just so quick and so ready to just kind of break. And it's the kind of Havertz that we've been waiting to see for some time now. And I don't think it's a coincidence that he now has two players playing off him who are just constantly looking for him and just waiting to pass the ball to him. And I mean, obviously the Florian Wirtz goal at the start was just incredible, but that in itself is that in itself is just something in isolation. I know it was a move, I know it was a set-piece move and Toni Kroos found him, but that kind of goal from that range is just pure technique. The one that actually impressed me the most was the second one, where we had Florian Wirtz cut inside. Doesn't even have to look up to know where Musiala is making that run. You know, it's obviously something they've probably done together for youth teams, or it's just instinctive and they know how to pull each other out. And that's something we saw over and over again. As much as France did try to break Germany down at times, and as much as they tried to get past the two fullbacks, that front three got past that French backline time and time and time again. And I thought that second goal was just a perfect illustration of what those three players can do when they combine together. And it says to me that that's the front line going forward. There's nothing else that you really can or should change about that. And actually, my newsletter this week is on Dortmund, and you know, I do make a notable comment about how there was only one Dortmund player in that squad. And after the France game, obviously talking about Niklas Füllkrug, after the way that Kai Havertz played in that France game, it's unlikely that Füllkrug will play anything more than, you know, roll off the bench at the Euros this summer, because the way that Havertz was just so incredible. The only thing that I'm a bit worried about is what happens to Gundogan going forward, and how you maybe squeeze a Leroy Sané in there, because is Nagelsmann kind of tempted to swap out Gundogan for Sané because he obviously plays as a number 10 for Bayern so tremendously well this season, or does he feel an obligation to stick with his captain in that regard?
Well, it's a really, actually kind of been wondering that myself, like, what do you do with Leroy Sané now that this is actually working so well? Because I do actually think that Gundogan gives this attack structure, right? Because Wirtz and Musiala are sort of the roaming half nines. It's sort of what I described them. I guess the same is true for Havertz, although I do think Kai Havertz played like a number nine there quite well, actually. You know, that's really good news. But what do you do with Leroy Sané? Is a really interesting question, because Sané is going to play a role in this team. He's by no means out of this team. In fact, he traveled to Frankfurt today to be with the national team, right? Because Julian Nagelsmann said he wants the core group of players to be together, even if they can't play. So Sané was there to hang out with the squad, which is a clear indication to me that Sané is part of the plans. And that, of course, then begs the question, as you said, like, where? Where do you put him? Because this did work quite well. Do you stick him between Musiala and Wirtz, if there is such a thing? Because like the two, I feel, didn't really play a set position. And I also felt that just looking at them playing together, it looked like so much fun. You know, it was like two boys just having fun playing football. Which is, of course, what has been missing from this German national team for a very long time as well. But I sense that the Nagelsmann basically went to them, hey, you two, just go do what you want to do, play good football, have some fun. Don't worry about the rest, because there's Toni, there's Ilkay, you know, there's Robert. They will take care of everything else. You guys just be you, and the rest is just up to the other guys in the team. Now, what do you do with Leroy Sané there? Like, I really struggle with that a little bit, because I don't think you would sacrifice a little bit of that attacking structure that provides the freedom to Musiala and Wirtz. Because like even Havertz, the way he's playing for Arsenal and Mikel Arteta's system, that's a bit more structured, isn't it? Right? Yeah, he's a number nine, sometimes drifting into a number 10 role, but he has a clearly defined role. If you put in Sané there, then you have three guys that will drift around. Is that too much? That is, I think, an important question. I mean, look, for a long time, this Germany team has struggled to create chances and score goals. There were moments where they could have scored two more. Undav and Füllkrug come off the bench, I thought was crazy, because Müller came off too. Nagelsmann threw on more attacking players, even though he was up two goals, which I thought was balls. Wow, good for you. But also, I think kept up the pressure on France, right? And actually helped them see out the game. But, you know, that is the clear question here, is like, how do you compensate for that structurally? Or does it not matter? Can you do it because Kroos and Andrich give you so much structure behind an attacking three of Musiala, Sané, and Wirtz, that it really doesn't matter. In fact, that it's maybe even a good thing, because it could lead to even more goals.
I do suspect that the way that you fit Sané into his team is actually by replacing him with Robert Andrić, and then you pull Gundogan back to sit alongside Toni Kroos, because we have to remember that, you know, it's all well and good setting up to play against France, but Germany aren't playing France in the group stages of the competition. They're playing Scotland, Hungary, if I'm not mistaken, and Switzerland.
Those are the problem teams.
Yeah, exactly. It's three teams who will sit deep and expect Germany to attack them. And with the best will in the world, Robert Andrić isn't the guy to kind of break that down. He does occasionally score tremendous long-range goals for Leverkusen, so there's that. But I think if you're trying to squeeze Sané into this team, you take Andrić out, you pull Gundogan back to play alongside Kroos, and then you slot Sané in as that number 10 role, and then that leaves you with like a front four to kind of take it from there. And then, of course, you know, if or when you get to the latter stages of the competition, that's when someone like Robert Andrić then comes back into the fold, maybe. For example, if you end up against a team like France, or, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they do set up against the Netherlands this year or this week, because if it's the same sort of system, which I suspect it will be the same sort of system, but if he does pull Andrić out and put a more attacking player in, then that might be a suggestion of, you know, just for Germany to have some sort of practice with Kroos and Gundogan in the midfield rather than Andrić there. But that's the only way I can really see that changing, because I'd be really quite surprised if he drops a Musiala or a Wirtz at this point, because both of them were just absolutely incredible in that game.
Yeah, I think the front three is set. Musiala, Wirtz and Havertz, I think it's their roles to lose. And yeah, the rest we have to see. I mean, this Netherlands game is going to be interesting. The projection is that the lineup is going to be the same, which makes sense, because I think this is pretty close to the starting 11, maybe with one or two changes that we're going to see at the Euros. But, you know, this is a really good step. My only caution is they have beaten France before and then lost to Turkey and Austria. The problem opponents have never been the big sides for this Germany team. They actually tend to do quite well against them. It's the little teams that we have to worry about. And Netherlands, of course, is a big side, so we'll see what they do there. I think most importantly, my takeaway from this game is Nagelsmann went all in and it paid off. And you know, I actually said in the Substack chat to one of our subscribers, I'm not even sure the second result matters as much as this first one. Because if they don't win this game, they will say, well, it's all up to experiments. They need to find a system, yada, yada, yada. It's all going to be okay long term, right? This first game was hugely important. It sets the tone. And I think they hit the note. They hit the note just right. So, yeah, it's hugely encouraging. And I think if let's say they get a really convincing win against the Netherlands, I think that changes everything for the Euro, Stefan. I think it does. I think the starting 11 can go toe-to-toe with anyone.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, as we kind of said on the preview show, these are kind of the last real kind of opportunities for Nagelsmann to experiment, kind of nail down his tactics, because they then have two games, but they're very, very quickly, you know, they're just like a mere few weeks before the tournament starts, and obviously he's not going to be making any real changes or tests there. So this is Nagelsmann's last opportunity to kind of nail down how he wants the team to play going forward, and I think that's exactly what we got here. I don't expect to see a huge amount of changes against the Netherlands, and I think Nagelsmann himself will be more focused on making sure the team plays well, performances are well, the players that need to link up do link up, those kind of little pairings that we talked about earlier on. I think that's what's crucial, and you know, and then they kind of take it from there going forward. But I think you're absolutely right. I think it's a sign of hope. It's a formation. It's a tactic. It's a route forward for Germany, and they now know. They now have a blueprint to work from going forward, and how to perform well. And it's really as simple as that, to be honest. And as you said, you know, you don't want to put too much weight in one performance, but it just felt like the first time in a long time that Germany actually knew what they were doing on a football pitch. And it, for the first time in a while, it felt like 11 players who wanted to be there, who were all enjoying playing with each other, and who were all playing for one another as in a coherent system. And yeah, that's hugely encouraging. So yeah, very, very good news for Germany.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Newsflash, you can lose weight like a celebrity without being a celebrity. New Glucotrim from GNC delivers serious results with a proven formula, and you don't need a crazy expensive prescription. So get on that celebrity weight loss level with New Glucotrim. Get it at GNC.
At Vanguard, you're more than just an investor. You're an owner. That means your priorities are Vanguard's too. So whether you're planning for retirement or trying to save up for your next big adventure, Vanguard will work alongside you to set personalized investment goals. That's the value of ownership. All investing is subject to risk. Vanguard is owned by its funds, which are owned by Vanguard's fund shareholder clients. Vanguard Marketing Corporation Distributor.
Jake from State Farm here, hanging out with Mel's Mow & Grow. Mel chose State Farm for small business insurance because his local agent is a small business owner too. So she knew how to help him personalize his policies. And now, he's rolling in the green. Like a good neighbor. Guys, I'm trying to do the line.
Oh, sorry, Jake.
It's all good. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to an agent today.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.